All right, 807, as we await our guests on our phone lines within the next 5 to 6 minutes, James Montgomery. As I mentioned, he's been a guest on this program now for about 3 or 4 times, and he is going to be playing in Franklin next Friday night at 7:30 at the Black Box Theater on West Central Street. The address is actually 15 West Central, right up the road a piece from Dean Junior College. Yeah, he's been basically playing music for just over 50 years. And as I said, last time he was with us was about 6 months ago. He was talking about Paul Butterfield, who was actually a blues legend. He basically did a record about him, or an album, I should say, in light of his career as well. But, you know, he's been doing some music for a long, long time. As I said, he's played in many locations right here in Attleboro. He was here about 3 years ago when he played at the Elks Lodge. You know, you can always go for more information on him. Go on to his website. It is jamesmontgomery.com. He's got many social media sites as well. But yeah, one of the big things that we really want to get to him, of course, is how many great performers that he has played with and toured with as well. You know, he's actually toured with the likes of Greg Allman, Johnny Winter, James Brown, Muddy Waters, Buddy Guy, The Stones, Aerosmith, Joe Cocker. That's just a few. As I said, he's been living down in Southern Rhode Island now for a number of years, but he was actually originally from Detroit, so he's got a little Motown in him as well. I've seen him a couple of times in person. One of them, of course, was over at Plain Ridge. He was outside of our patio. First year that we put the patio out about 3 years ago. And boy, I tell you, he's got like an 11 or 12 piece band. And boy, they go crazy. He was wailing on his harmonica and just a super guy. And hopefully you'll get a chance to listen to James when he calls in just a few moments from now. All right, so tomorrow, if all goes well, as I mentioned, Attleboro City Council President Jay DeLisio should be with us during our 7 o'clock hour. Also want to remind you, later on tonight here in Attleboro, it is the annual Attleboro Area Rotary Auction from 7 to 9 p.m. on AACS Channel 15. A lot of great items are up for grabs, folks. Many of those items have actually gone out to bid since March 20th. That is when the website was first up. Yeah, it's been up a few weeks now. So many people out there have already bid in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, you kind of look at some of those items, the super specials, and you think like, I would love to get this. And then you go into it and say, it's way beyond my reach of money. Well, that's why, it's because it's been on. They put those items online a couple of weeks ahead of time, the same way that they've done for years, folks. They've been doing this for 65 years, and I think the Rotary people know what the heck they're doing these days, huh? I remember when I worked for Inland Cable and through its Comcast days, when they were in the big building in downtown Attleboro, and always remember doing camera or doing directing or doing audio every single year when they would come in. Usually they would come in around this time of the year. Sometimes they would come in the last Monday of March. And I always remember on a Monday night, they would come in from 7 to 9 p.m. Sometimes they would go on until 11 o'clock. Yeah, most of the time it was from 7 to 11. They recently went down in their time from until 9 o'clock. But they always had great people, on the phone lines and people calling in as well. All right, folks, as I said, this is, I believe it's our third or fourth time that living legend, Rhode Island living legend James Montgomery is back with us once again, and he is joining us on our phone lines. Good morning, James.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing wonderful. As I just mentioned, you've been with us for the last three or four times, the last couple of years, and boy, I tell you, when you think about music and you think about blues and rock and roll and stuff like that, with a little bit of Motown behind you, of course, where you were born and raised, James Montgomery is the name. So once again, James, thank you for joining us.
Now listen, it's always a pleasure to come in your show, Dom. And, your listeners are lucky to have someone like you and that they can listen to is wonderful radio personality and a knowledgeable music person. So it's great to be on the show.
Thank you so much. Yeah, as I mentioned before, last time you were with us, give us a little background, first of all. One of the things that we talked about the last time, you were doing the music for one of the greats of all times, to Paul Butterfield. Talk a little bit more about that again.
Yeah, we had an opportunity. You know, Paul was one of the most influential figures in the history of American music. And I say that because, you know, before young people saw Paul Butterfield play back in the day, you know, he had the best band in the business back then, Mike Bloomfield and Alvin Bishop Paul. And he had Howlin' Wolf's rhythm section, which shocked everybody that this white guy from Detroit was able to get Paul, you know, Howlin' Wolf's rhythm section to join his band. But anyway, so the musicianship level was off the charts. I mean, you know, Bloomfield was considered a better guitar player than Eric Clapton back then. And so what would happen is all these young kids would come in who were musicians, and they thought that their job as a musician was to play what was on the record. And if the Beach Boys did an 8-bar solo, they did that. And if Chuck Berry did an 8-bar solo, they did that. But after they saw Paul Butterfield with the extended jams that they did with Mike Bloomfield, especially in Paul, every musician who saw him said, you know what, when they point at me, I can just play. I can just play my instrument. I can make up stuff. I can jam. He gave every musician, young musician, the freedom to play their instrument without worrying about whether or not it was on the record or not. And that was a revolutionary back then. So I credit him a lot with bringing in the era of modern blues and rock and roll. And you know, there were these hippies out in San Francisco, you know, who were taking a big hit and go, you know, those guys are playing a really long solo, you know. And that was and that was the Grateful Dead who said, you know, let's start a jam band because we want to be able to play too. So anyway, very influential guy. I got to know him fairly well. And a record label approached me and David Hall, my bass player, who had played with Buddy Miles and the Joe Perry Project, and he still tours once in a while as the bass player for Aerosmith. And they walked in, and David and I had been talking about doing a record for Paul Butterfield for years. And a label from the West Coast came up to us and said, do you guys want to do a record for Paul Butterfield? And the rest was history.
And unfortunately, I know, as you know, he died at a very young age in 87. Was he 44 years old? But one thing that I listened to his music in the past as well, not only a great harmonica player like yourself, but he also was a very trained classical flautist, which, I mean, he played that flute just, I mean he didn't even have to open his eyes when he played.
Yeah, no, he was an incredible flute player. And you know, I was in a documentary about him, Horns from the Heart, which is a great movie. I think it's on Netflix now. And his brother said that Paul learned how to play harmonica like that in 6 months. And I'm looking at myself, let's see, I've been playing for 53 years, and I still can't even play like him. What's the matter with me over here?
But you've got your own style. I mean, I've seen you a couple of times, and I mean, you've got your own style playing for just over 50 years. We had you on when you were basically celebrating the 50th anniversary. Can you believe it's been over 50 years, James, that you've been doing music and people coming out in droves to see you? I mean, that's a tribute to the music. And I mean, when you're seeing these people, you know, and we'll talk about the event that you're doing next week in a few minutes. It just amazes me. What are you looking at when you're looking out there with your band, you're looking out at these people, you're seeing people who've probably seen you many times, but also you're seeing younger people out there who are really getting into the music. I mean, the blues, the harmonica, the rock, but you're getting some new and young people that are really getting into this music, and it seems to be like happening almost every other day.
Well, you know, that is true, and the same way that I came to blues as a very young person. You know, my second record was produced by Tom Dowd, who produced Aretha Franklin and Ray Charles and the Allman Brothers and Eric Clapton, among others. And you know, he talked to me one day and he said, you know, blues is going to be cyclical. You know, there's going to be people that come. There's going to be an occasional crossover record like The Thrill Is Gone or you know, Smoking Gun, Robert Fayer, or Susan Tedeschi's song, you know, they crossed over, or Stevie Ray Vaughan with Pride and Joy. And every once in a while, there's going to be a definite blues record. And Bonnie Raitt, of course, you know, it's just like, you know, I've been playing with Bonnie Raitt since we were both 19 years old. And you know, and she always has an occasional record that crosses over and becomes huge. So young people are going to continue to come to it the same way that I did. You know, these niche markets like blues, jazz, and classical, there's always going to be another generation of young people who discover it and take it to heart. And then, of course, you know, the people, once you get hooked on blues or jazz, or, you know, you're with it for the rest of your life. And you know, and it's funny because I've been selling out everywhere recently, you know, and since November, I've sold out every show I've done. And some of these have been 400 or 500 seat, you know, theaters and everything. And you know, so I do have, I was the biggest band on the college circuit years ago. I mean, even bigger than Aerosmith on colleges for a little bit. And it's funny because I get these people that come up and say, "Wow, James, I haven't seen you since 1979. Uh-huh. And my standard response is, "Well, gee, thanks for supporting the band all these years."
Yeah, really.
But you're right. I look out and the other great thing about blues music is that to the extent that you have a good night is the extent to which the audience and you lose yourself in the music and you become as one. So it's just a great form of music to play. And as you say, we've been doing great.
Yeah, one other thing that, you know, looking through your bio at some point, I don't know how you got into this one, but you were also a very accomplished harpist too, right?
Well, they call the harmonica the blues.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That's what it's called. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But yeah, talking about the harmonica, you know.
Although I've seen some people play really good harp.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen myself. You know, going into the harmonica, really, when you think about a harmonica, I mean, I think one of the earliest times where I saw on video and stuff, you know, John Lennon, you know, played the mouth organ, the harmonica as well. You know, even when he was doing all his music in the early 60s, you know, it just amazes me that how many people use the harmonica as a tool in their music. And it really sounds so good. I mean, blues, country, a little bit of everything. I mean, I know I used to watch the Hee Haw show years ago, and they used to always use that as well. But it's kind of a lost art, because every once in a while you use the, you know, the tissue paper and the comb as a kid as well. But you remember that, huh?
Yeah, I grew up in a jug band, you know. My first band was a jug band with Chris Seo from the Uptown Horns, who I'm playing with this Tuesday, and this coming Tuesday in Connecticut. And by the way, my rhythm guitar player on that show is Rick Grossbeck, the owner of the Boston Celtics. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so, you know, it's a very intimate instrument. A couple of reasons. And I think that's why Paul Butterfield called the record "Horn from the Heart." It's the only instrument that you have to put your body in the same position you would put it in if you were going to speak a note. If I want to bend a note, I go, and it's the same way I would speak it. So the harmonica, the reed in the harmonica literally becomes your vocal cord, literally. Your vocal cord is no longer in the voice box. It's now part of the instrument. And also, it's that and the flute are the only two instruments you can play without seeing what you're fingering, you know. Mm-hmm. Although you can on the flute a little bit, so it's a very intimate instrument, and it is, you know, you do see it more and more in different you know, different things. I mean, John Lennon was a great harmonica player. Steven Tyler, who I love, is an excellent harmonica player. I played with Jim Belushi. I played with Dan Aykroyd. I played with John Goodman. All these guys are pretty damn good. Huey Lewis, excellent, really incredible harmonica player. I started playing with Huey Lewis in the 70s. Bill Graham used to put us together at shows at the Fillmore. And so there's, you know, there's a lot of great people, great harmonica players that people wouldn't know about it. And Mick Jagger is a harmonica freak. And as a matter of fact, one New Year's Eve, I came off stage in 1984 at New York, which was the biggest club in at Trax in New York, the biggest club in New York at the time. And I walk into my dressing room because the band is still playing. I do the Jackie Wilson thing. And there's Mick, just me and Mick, you know, and he was down there to see me specifically because he's a harmonica guy. So it's amazing how many big stars and great rock musicians are secretly harmonica mm-hmm. freaks, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a great instrument.
It really is. You know, you're coming back into the area again. You're up in Franklin. I know not too far away from us. This is a great venue. I've been there a couple of times to see other artists. Talk about this one, the Black Box there in downtown Franklin, coming up next Friday night.
Well, yeah, it is. You know, and you know, when I first showed up there, I said, well, look at this place. It's a black box. But we worked there with Al Mercer, who's a great guy. It's one of these venues that, you know, it's a multi-use venue. You know, they do children's theater, they do bands, they do community work and everything. But every time we play there, we sell out. And it's one of these places where there's certain venues where we play where there's some kind of magic that happens between the audience and the band, you know, which happens every night, but some nights more so than others. And the Black Box has always been like that for us. We've always had a complete ball playing there. We're only there once a year. So now's your time. And we have this great band called the Daybreakers opening up for us, who are also an excellent band. And so, the Black Box to me is like a family night. It's like a family reunion when we play there. And it's just a great room and easy to find and you know, kind of midway between everything, between Boston and Providence and Worcester. It's very easy to get to. And like I say, the people that run it are like family. And every time we play there, the audience couldn't be better. It's just, it's a very special place to see the band because we always come off stage going, wow, yet another great night at the Black Box. It's just a wonderful place for us.
Yeah, 15 West Central Street next Friday night at 7:30. Yeah, the reason I kind of know that one is because when in my earlier days, when I was a wedding and party DJ every once in a while, I would be downtown in Franklin every once in a while when they would have their outdoor block parties. And the Franklin Performing Arts Center, the kids over there would actually get up on stage in the street in downtown Franklin and just do different scenes from different plays. So a lot of talent coming in there. Really, a lot of talent coming from that area. And as I said, I think one of them that I was there, one time they did Godspell. I mean, and the kids weren't even old enough to know Godspell in the 1970s, but then they started doing all of the other Disney classics. Boy, I tell you, these kids are out there doing some great things. That's kind of like around this area, the doing music. The School of Rock up in this area has been doing so many great things in the last 10 years. These kids who really want to know, and adults who really want to know the business of music, they do have a place to learn, and they've been doing great things now. I believe I think the School of Rock has been open now for, I think, 13 or 14 years now. But I tell you, it's just so many venues. Basically,
we've actually done work with the School of Rock, and every time that we do something with the School of Rock, usually it's a fundraiser.
Right.
There's always a School of Rock band that opens for us, but then, you know, we look at these kids and we go, you know, we got to drag that guy on stage. We got to drag that girl on stage. So we always drag a few of them up there. And, it's funny because, you know, I see these 16-year-olds, you go, wow, look at that kid. He's so good at 16. And then I remember, hey, wait a minute. I had a band when I was 16, and we opened up for Iggy Pop, you know?
Yeah, really. Huh? You know, the first time I think I saw you a couple of times in the past, you did play here in Attleboro at the Elks Lodge a few years ago, but then about 3 years ago, I work at a local casino as a marketing and promotions director over at Plainridge. You, the first year, you brought your 12-piece band outside to the patio where I was kind of in the background doing some work, but you brought your big stage. There were two platforms for the stage because you had so many people, and they were telling me at some point, holy God, we got to get him back in, back to the casino again to do an outdoor thing or inside, whatever. But it just as amazes me how much people who have never seen you in the past are starting to really enjoy you, either going on social media or basically coming to almost every other concert that you actually do.
Well, hey, listen, now that you mentioned that show, book me back there again. I'll give you 12.5% for that.
We will definitely.
On that particular show, I brought in the Rolling Stones horn section.
Yeah.
And I supplemented it with the Tina Turner saxophone player and the Beach Boys saxophone player. And, of course, my band, I have David Hall, who played with Buddy Miles, Joe Cocker, Joe Perry, and has actually done four tours as the bass player for Aerosmith. And I brought in Marty Richards on drums, who was with the Jay Giles band for 5 years. He's my regular guy. He'll be at the Black Box, along with David Hall and George McCann. He's right there. He's right from Ashland, Mass. But he actually is good enough that they made me a blues brother on Danny's 30th birthday party. So, you know, I've toured with those guys a few times. And with Belushi and Aykroyd, they're tremendous, the best people in the business. But my guitar player one time, they were coming out here, and they needed a guitar player, and I hooked them up with my guy, George McCann, and they were just going, wow, this guy is incredible. So you know, I brought in a superstar band, but basically every time I play, I bring in superstars. Mm-hmm. I bring in the best people at every position, which will be happening at Franklin, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is I want to get into just briefly, knowing some of the background of who you are and, you know, doing so many great blues songs as well. I got a few of the CDs myself. You've also had your own radio show for the last five years now, Backstage with the Blues. And I remember listening to one of them. You were actually right down the street from you, WADK down in downtown Newport. You've done some great shows there as well.
Yeah, you know, I had that show a while ago. It was funny. My manager said, you know, we should branch out. My office was in New York City, and we should branch out. You know, maybe we get a radio show for you or something. Yeah, that's a great idea. The very next day, I'm walking down the street in Newport, and Bill Lancaster comes up to me and says, you know, we've got four or five stations. We want you to do a blues show the very next day. So, you know, I called Bonnie Raitt and John Lee Hooker and James Cotton and Greg Allman and said, geez, if I did a show, would you guys come on? They all said yes. So I called them up. I said, yeah, I'll do a radio show. And I did that show. I did that show for about 5 years. And, you know, half the people who were on it I knew already. But the other half, I got to meet a lot of great people that, you know, especially a guy like Bobby Rush, who's not my favorite. But then I was asked to join the Johnny Winter Band, and I was with Johnny for about 5 or 6 years, and it was hard for me to maintain the radio show and be on the road with Johnny at the same time, because, of course, a lot of the work I did with Johnny was in, like, you know, was in Europe, you know, Norway and Paris and Italy, and they actually played Prague. And so it was a great show for me. And I'm talking to Laurie Urso, my producer on that show. And right now I'm leaning toward putting together a podcast, which would be archival, and playing all these old interviews that I have with some of the greatest names in blues, and many of whom have passed away since then. But anyway, that was a great time for me. You know, we went down to Memphis every year for the Blues Awards, and, you know, would knock off 5 or 10 interviews, but in the beginning, almost every interview we did was literally backstage with an artist. So it turned out to be a great show for me. And like I say, but once I joined Johnny Winter's band, it became hard for me to maintain it.
Yeah, and the other person that you've worked with, I know another Rhode Island native, Duke Robillard, who actually worked with Fabulous T-Birds, but also worked with the likes of the Roomful of Blues, which I've got probably got just about almost all of their CDs as well. But yeah, Duke Robillard's still with us, about what 75 years old these days. But he's been doing a lot of good music.
How old is he now?
He is now 75. He'll be 76 in October.
A youngster.
He's just a youngster, right? He's just a youngster, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'll be 75 in May. But anyway, I love Duke. I've known Duke. The night I met Duke Robillard, he was 18 years old. He was wearing bib overalls and playing with Kenny Lyons and what's the name of that?
Tombstone. Kenny Lyons and Tombstone, right?
In the Tombstone.
Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you. And Kenny Lyons, I have so much respect for that guy. He's really the godfather of Rhode Island blues. He was the first to have it with him and Steve Nardella. And then Scotty Hamilton had a band back then, and he went on to become a renowned jazz sax player. But I've known Duke for a long time. And one time when he was living in East Providence, I went to visit him way back in the day, and he was playing all music from the 40s and 50s, but his house was decorated like it was from the 40s and 50s, too, so I loved it. And now, of course, he has a studio in his basement. What's he call it? The Boom Boom Room or something like that. And he's still producing records. And I've done at least a dozen shows with him over the years, usually where he comes in and sits in with my band and we do like five or six or seven of his numbers. But here again, there's another legendary guy who's just, Rhode Island has produced a number of legendary musicians, and it's just an incredible place to be.
Yeah, I mean, I just said with Duke doing that, of course, with Roomful of Blues, Sugar Ray Norcia as well, and I saw them some years ago when they put out an album. When was it? The Met in downtown Providence. I saw them at that time, but as you just mentioned, follow up on that. There was just so many great artists from the Rhode Island area. I mean, back in the 1970s, 60s, and 70s, you had the disco group, the Tavares Brothers, you had the Cowsills, also from Newport. Yeah, I mean, I've seen them a couple of times. The Cowsills, I've seen Susan down in Disney a couple of years ago. But you had so many. Now, here's another band that being from Rhode Island, and the Wadsworth Mansion, the Wadsworth family, originally from Rumford, Rhode Island, did Sweet Mary in the 1970s as well. There's a group, big one-hit wonder.
Now, there's one I didn't. I actually recorded with Barry Cowsill. We made this record. It was unbelievable. There was at least four hit records on it. And then he went down to New Orleans on a health journey out to California, but he decided to stop at New Orleans on his way out, and Katrina happened, and then we lost him.
Right.
Nobody knows what happened, but we made a great record with Barry Cowsill. So all those Rhode Island groups, and who else did you just mention?
I just mentioned the Wadsworth Mansion. Actually, the Wadsworth Mansion
Them I didn't know, but there was, someone else you mentioned. But anyway, the Cowsills, and let's not forget John Cafferty and Beaver Brown and Stu Cutler and the Schemers and... just so many great Rhode Island bands. And, I think a lot of that has to do, I think the reason why there's been so many great original bands out in New England is because of the amount of colleges and universities scattered throughout New England. In the Midwest, growing up in the Midwest, it's almost as though they wouldn't hire you unless you were a cover band. But out here in New England, because you can get so much support from, like I say, all these niche markets, people that go to college, sometimes they don't want to be associated with top 40. They'd rather be associated with original material. So I think the fact that there's so many colleges and universities, lends itself to original bands. Steve Smith and the Nakeds is another one.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, when you start listing all the great bands that come out of Rhode Island, it's like a nonstop you know, it's nonstop. There's one after the other.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, as also, you know, you're talking about all of these legends out there. You've got, you know, some great groups that came out of the Boston area. Boston, Jay Giles. I actually just saw Danny Klein not too long ago. He played at a local venue and, you know, still doing, still going strong, the original bass player for Jay Giles. Yeah. Danny is one of those guys who I think is going to be around for another 20 or 30 years or more, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, as long as he keeps wearing those wild suits, I think he's going to be around for a while.
Exactly.
But yeah, you know, I mean, you know, when we started our band, there were basically, and John Landau, who wrote for the Phoenix back then and eventually became Bruce Springsteen's manager. And by the way, let this sink in. The night I met Bruce Springsteen, he sold 75 tickets the night I met him. That's how far back I go with him. But anyway, so Landau wrote this big article. You know, well, the big three bands in Boston are Jay Giles, James Montgomery, and Aerosmith. But, you know, since, and that was very early in the days, that would have been, I don't know, late 60s, early 70s, maybe. But then the amount of bands that came out of there, you know, I mean, the Cars, you know, when we first booked the Cars, they were a folk duo called Ocasek and Oren. They'd just come out from Ohio. And a lot of people wouldn't book them, but you know, we Barbara Holiday and I booked them at the N Square Men's Bar as a duo. And then the next thing you know, they became a band called Captain Swing. So I put them on as my opening act for a number of times. And I put Jonathan Richman on as my opening act back then. And then the next thing you know, they're the Cars, and every song they write becomes a huge hit. So. Mm-hmm. So a lot of bands, the Mighty Mighty Bosstones and Amy Mann. I mean, the list goes on and on of great Boston bands that have happened. But like I say, I think the reason there's a lot of great bands that come out of, you know, Boston and Providence is because there's a lot of eclectic taste. You know, a lot of college students have eclectic taste. And they would rather support an original band than a cover band.
Yeah, I think so. You're absolutely right. James, I know that I know you got some other things going on today here and there, busy guy, but you've been doing any new things going on this year? You got some more? I mean, you just recently did the Paul Butterfield tribute here and there. Anything new coming out from your band?
There's a couple of things. You know, we're working on new material. We're putting together a new show. And in the meantime, I produced two documentaries over the past, like, 4 or 5 years. You know, when you're making an independent film, you film, and then you run out of money, and then you got to raise some more money, and then you film and film and film. That's why when you see the Academy Awards, well, we've been working on this documentary for 8 years. Yeah, that's because they kept running out of money.
Right.
But anyway, so I produced a documentary about James Cotton, the arguably the best blues harmonica player who's ever lived, but he was very close to me. He called me son, and I called him dad. And that documentary is my first documentary that I ever was part of. I co-produced it, and we finished it with the highest award you can get. We were one of five finalists in the Library of Congress Ken Burns Prize for Film. I get to drop two big names and one award. I'll say it again, the Library of Congress Ken Burns Prize for Film. So I sat next to Ken Burns at the Library of Congress with Jamie Raskin and Liz Cheney and everybody, and I got that award. And then I produced another documentary about my younger brother, who is an LGBTQ activist, back in the days when nobody was doing it. He had congressmen that would come up, well, Jeff, I'm sympathetic to your cause, but I just don't have any gay people in my district. I mean, that's what he was dealing with. But he was so effective at fighting for the rights of the gay community that he ended up on the Aryan Nation hit list, and they tried to kill him several times. One time even walking into his office with guns blazing. So he was a hero in the movement, and that documentary is extremely powerful and moving. And that one's almost ready to be released because of licensing. But the James Cotton one, we got picked up by Byron Allen's company, who's a pretty big Hollywood mogul. But we're showing that when we have licenses for limited showing, and so we're going to be showing that when, you know, at various theaters throughout New England. But between the documentaries and working on new material with the band and having a work schedule, we're busy and we like it like that.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, last but not least, James, you're going to be down in Franklin next week. So what are you looking forward to it? I mean, I know you've said you love the people there, but some new people coming in and there, and you can go online and to get those tickets even as we speak.
Yeah, definitely, and I encourage everyone to go there, and also in April we're going to be in Natick, which is a whole different marketplace, but it looks like we're going to be doing a benefit for the for veterans up at the Natick Elks around the 19th of the month, but that Franklin show is like, you know, like I say, it's like old home week for us. It's like a family reunion. So we can't wait to see everyone come there and have a ball. And there's a lot of dancing there too. So get ready to party.
Oh yeah, you'll be partying. You'll be partying on stage with the people as well. So James, thank you so much. Down the line, we'll definitely talk to you. Hopefully in the next few months or so. But big success to you once again, and good luck.
Well, and thanks, Tom. And you know, as blues musicians, we appreciate people like you having us on, and your listeners are lucky to have someone, who's not a computer, and who actually plays music and has conversations. So we, all of us, appreciate immensely being able to come on your show. So thank you very much.
All right, James. Thank you so much. All right, James Montgomery with us, of course, this morning. Boy, I tell you, what a down-to-earth guy. You know, as I said, I met him a couple of times in person. I met him in Plainville. I also met him at the Elks and saw him a couple of other times in the past few years as well. Great harmonica player, blues artist, and yeah, a little bit of rock and roll. And as I said, yeah, he was actually born in Detroit, so he's got a little bit of Motown behind him as well. And probably not going to be the last time we hear from him. I'm sure that we will probably talk to him again, maybe within the next 6 months. He's always trying to come on this program. As I said, now this is something that I kind of knew that he was going to say something, because his publicist mentioned something to me about this. He said, you know, look out, because he may talk about the great things that you've done for this community with the music and having people on the air. And I went, well, it's not about me. It's about him, you know, and where he is playing. He said, well, that's the way he is. He wants to praise you for the work that you have done. I do appreciate it. Thank you so much. I mean, I'm a person that says, you know, like, you know, somebody says, you know, pats me on the back and says, oh, you do a great job, da, 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 all that. I said, thank you so much. But I almost don't like to be in the limelight. You know, I'm just kind of like that. But, you know, when I get a compliment, I say, well, thank you so much. You know, you don't have to do that. But then they turn around and they say, well, yes, I need to do that, because, you know, you're doing a service for all of us. And I appreciate that. But I want to thank James Montgomery once again. James will be in Franklin at the Black Box Theater next Friday night at 7:30. That is in downtown Franklin on West Central Street. You can go to the website there for more details, the Black Box Theater's website for more details. All right, 8:45, folks. We're going to finish off our last 15 minutes with maybe a song or two. We'll try to get a couple more of those one-hit wonders, and we shall return in just 60 seconds. We got to bring back some of the commercials that we did not play during the during our interview with him. So we'll be back in just about 2 minutes from now.